Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from AAA Go Magazine, The News and Observer, Guest Quest, and The Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. 'Tis the holiday season, and on today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to take a look at some holiday travel treats coming up. First, we'll run down some of the holiday highlights that will be taking place in both North and South Carolina. And we do this by going to the Holiday Road Trip Planner found in the November-December 2020 issue of AAA Go Magazine. Now through January 3rd in Belmont, we have the Chinese Lantern Festival, mythical creatures, flowers, trees, insects, and critters. They glow throughout the garden with interactive light displays and colorful archways, acrobatic shows, and a marketplace featuring authentic Chinese folk arts and crafts are on site. There is a fee for this, and more information found at dsbg.org, dsbg.org. Now through December 24th in Charlotte, we have the Charlotte Christmas Village. The European-inspired market is coming back uptown Charlotte, and Austrian strudels, gingerbread, pretzels, and more are going to be available. Plus, visitors can sip hot mulled wine, hot chocolate, or alcohol-free glow wine in a souvenir village mug. It's all free, by the way. Check it out at citchristmasvillage.com. SitChristmasVillage.com. Again, SIT, C-I-T. Then we have Don't Miss, now through January 3rd in Concord at the Speedway Christmas, they call it. Hop in your car and set your sights on the spectacular drive-through light show featuring more than 4 million lights over a 3.75-mile course. And be sure to join the Christmas-themed drive-in theater on select nights. There is a fee for this, but you can get more information at charlottemotorspeedway.com. That's charlottemotorspeedway.com. Now we head to South Carolina, and now through December 30th in Columbia, the state capital, we have Lights Before Christmas. Visit Riverbank Zoo and Garden on select nights to experience Columbia's longest-running holiday tradition. More than 1 million lights, decorative displays, train rides, festive foods, and a lot more. There is a fee involved. More information found at riverbanks.org. That's riverbanks.org. And now through December 30th at North Myrtle Beach, the Great Christmas Light Show. More than 2 million lights will be on display along a 1.5-mile drive through North Myrtle Beach Park and Sports Complex. You can stop by Santa's Village on weekend nights for hot chocolate and more. There is a fee involved. Check it out at parks.nmb.us. That's parks.nmb.us. Now, in Georgetown, South Carolina, on selected dates, we have the Knights of 1,000 Candles 2020. Those dates are December 3rd through the 6th, December 10th through the 13th, and December 17th through the 20th. Enjoy Brook Green Gardens amid the glow of more than 2,700 hand-lit candles and sparkling lights. Walk the paths with a warm cup of cider, cocoa, or wine while you listen to holiday music. You can purchase tickets in advance, and it's more information available at brookgreengarden.org. That's brookgreengarden.org. And finally, now through December 31st on James Island, Holiday Festival of Lights. The Festival of Lights benefits the Lowcountry Food Bank. You can drive through the displays of lights and see a magnificent sculpture made from over 50 tons of sand. Ooh. There is a fee involved. Check it all out at holidayfestivaloflights.com. That's holidayfestivaloflights.com. And there is a little disclaimer here just for your information. The impact of COVID-19 continues to change the social landscape, so please contact these venues or check out those websites I mentioned to get the latest updates. So just so you know, even though they're publicizing and saying come on and enjoy, there could be some changes you need to know about before you head there. So just wanted to give you a heads up. Well, now that you have some holiday travel ideas, let's go west to the Volunteer State, where writer Deborah Pamplin takes us to a tender Tennessee Christmas. Her article is found in the November-December 2020 issue of AAA Go Magazine. And it's all about Johnson City, Tennessee, a great year-round go-to city, but during the holiday months, it's transformed into a winter wonderland. It's easy to get into the Christmas spirit while strolling down city streets lit up with Christmas lights, sipping hot chocolate and whipped cream from a local coffee shop, and taking in the holiday decorations displayed throughout the city. It's closer than you might think, and ideal for a weekend getaway for a week-long vacation. Johnson City is 244 miles from Raleigh, North Carolina, 217 miles from Columbia, South Carolina. Holiday fun. Plan your visit in December and create special holiday memories. The annual downtown in December takes place downtown the first weekend in December. Other holiday events include a tree lighting ceremony that kicks off the official start of the holiday season and varied family-friendly activities. Most events are free, and all events are open to both residents and visitors. The weekend also boasts a Christmas parade, complete with several floats, marching bands, and dancers, as well as Whoville Village. After the parade, visit the Farmers Market Pavilion. Here, kids can enjoy crafts and holiday goodies. Make time for a photo op with the Grinch and Cindy Lou Who. For a drive-by light display, visit the LaFrance Family Residence at 3502 Pine Timbers Drive. This well-lit Christmas-themed yard can warm the coldest Grinch heart. As are most holiday activities, it's all free. And so lots of fun there, huh? And there are plenty of bed and breakfast locations and hotels from which to choose. Perhaps some time in a cabin would add to your holiday feel. Watauga River Cabins, with accommodations for up to 9 guests, provides cozy lodging options for an extra special Christmas vacation. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, anyone? They sure make it sound tempting, don't they? How about some local history? Johnson City boasts a rich and interesting history. It was the home of Tennessee's first settler. It's also said to be a hideaway home for mob boss legend Al Capone in the 1920s. Perhaps a lesser-known nugget, the city has the nickname of Little Chicago due to Capone's alleged bootlegging. The historic Montrose Court is a historical landmark mostly because it was a home away from home for Capone during the Prohibition era. The George L. Carter Railroad Museum is a must-see for railroad enthusiasts. Dedicated to the builder of the Clinchfield Railroad, this museum showcases the history of the railway that ran more than 270 miles through rough mountain terrain in order to transport coal from eastern Kentucky to the Carolina Piedmont. The museum features toy trains, historic prototyped railroad memorabilia, and other items. While there's no entrance fee, the museum is well worth its weight in coal, as the writers say. Volunteers are readily available to share the history and events of the railroad, as well as provide tips on the basic model railroading. Okay? And a couple of other points here, back to nature. If you want to see firsthand the land where the railroad went through, make plans to visit the Tweetsie Trail now, a rail-to-trails project. This trail offers a relatively flat-grade path that's perfect for walking or biking. When it's completed, the 10-mile trail will win the title of the state's longest rail-to-trails location. You can soak in the history and beauty that surround you as you hike the trail. Now, you can head to the Winged Deer Park for more trail hikes and mountain biking. You can test your skills at the Frisbee Golf Park or use the boat ramp for a day outing on the water. Willow Springs Park houses a playground and some walking trails. Open year-round, these two parks provide a scenic spot for outdoor fun. And then we have Buffalo Mountain Park, another option for wilderness trails. This one provides opportunities to see wildlife. It's slightly secluded, so make sure to bring a friend along with you. And then we have other diversions. Shop for those last-minute Christmas gifts at the Village Antiques and Home Decor Mall. You'll find collectibles, primitive decor, furniture, and plenty of antiques. Enjoy a shopping break at a local favorite, Yeehaw Brewing Company. It's located downtown, and it's dog-friendly. Try a variety of beer flavors, and then visit the attached taco shop for other local flavors. Whether traveling for the holidays or planning for the upcoming spring break, Johnson City offers plenty during every season, and beautiful scenery, plenty of history, and museums, along with plenty of outdoor activities, are always waiting for you in this eastern Tennessee city. And again, because of COVID-19, you might want to check ahead before you travel just to make sure everything is as scheduled and as promised, okay? So just another little disclaimer there. And we're going to have more holiday travel destinations and stories in future episodes of Armchair Traveler. While we're enjoying the beautiful mountain scenery of East Tennessee, why don't we join writer Andrew Carter, who's going to take us hiking on the Appalachian Trail and offers escape from the noise. His article appeared in the October 25th, 2020 issue of the News and Observer. It was at 5,487 feet above sea level, somewhere on the North Carolina-Tennessee state line, when Tarzan walked past. That was not his real name, but the one he'd received when he began hiking the Appalachian Trail. Thru-hikers have their trail names, and Tarzan was his. For a minute or two, he provided some company, me and Tarzan, sharing one of the finest views in Great Smoky Mountain National Park, looking out over the endless ripples of mountain ridges that stretched into the distance. Me and Tarzan, standing a mile high in the fog and the clouds on a cool Thursday morning. I'd seen him the night before at the Peck's Corner Shelter along the Appalachian Trail. The shelter, like many that line the trail, is something like an open-faced log cabin, wooden platforms in the back to sleep on, with benches and a skinny wooden railing near the front. The railing had made for a fine kitchen, and the shelter a welcome gathering place after a long hike. In addition to Tarzan, there was a young couple who'd come to the trail from Philadelphia, four old friends in their 60s from Virginia, and a long-haired man who, after dark, pulled out his harmonica and began filling the lulls in conversation with music. He said he wanted to mellow everybody out, and then, among other things and other songs, provided a soulful rendition of Amazing Grace. Up above, in the space between the trees, the sky shined. There were no clouds, and in the remoteness of the wilderness, the stars dazzled. The man with the harmonica pointed out the Milky Way. I hadn't considered what the night sky might look like in the Smokies, but looking up, I realized that it, too, had to be among the reasons I'd taken this long walk. For several weeks, I'd planned this journey. First, I aspired to hike through the length of the Appalachian Trail, through the National Park, a length of about 70 miles or so. The logistics of a shuttle or leaving my car somewhere proved cumbersome. Then I settled on a 50-mile loop hike through the Smokies. By the second day of a four-day hike, I realized that was too much. The elevation gain was part of it, undoubtedly. My calves burned the farther I walked up the mountain. I also learned that it was not possible to pass an enviable view without stopping to admire it. Sometimes it was an unusually tall tree with a thick trunk and bright turning leaves. Sometimes it was the yellows, oranges, and reds of autumn that hung over trails like a canopy. A lot of times it was just mountains unfolding far as you could see. Seeking solitude. I'd come for the views, but also the solitude. In this, the longest and most difficult and strangest of years, I'd come for a sense of peace and still. I knew that a long solo hike could be the ultimate socially distanced activity. I hoped that it could provide, too, something of a mental reset, or at least a necessary pause to the otherwise inescapable drama of 2020. For 4 days, I became thankful to have phone reception that was only briefly intermittent. The world could have been ending, more so than it usually seems to be anyway these days, and there's a good chance it would have taken a day or more to find out. Time usually occupied with Zoom meetings or habitual Twitter scrolling was instead filled sitting on the rocks in the middle of streams, or slowly making my way to an elevation of more than 6,000 feet. Constant noise, literal and figurative, has become part of our modern world and an especially incessant part of 2020. It is the mental noise of constantly breaking news and social media ranting. It is the noise of restless inner monologues, the uncertainty of what next week or next year might bring. The first night in the woods, the loudest noise was that of a stream rushing over rocks. It provided some comfort, as did a bit of time without modern comforts. For 4 days, there were no political ads telling me who to vote for, no news of what some politician said about this or that. The virus and its toll did not fade in the mountains, nor should the thoughts of its consequences. If anything, the grim details of the human cost, the 200,000 and more counting Americans dead and the endless infections, made me more grateful to be outside. I opened the logbook in the Icewater Spring shelter right off the Appalachian Trail, and I found a similar sentiment. On a day hike from Newfound Gap to the Bunyan, First time ever, and it's beautiful. So refreshing to be out in nature. COVID has shut down so many options. Glad to have this adventure. First time adventure. As I skimmed through the entries in the journal, a group of three young guys who looked to be in college sat in front of me and ate lunch. A family stopped in for a rest. An older couple shared a picnic on the grass out in front of the shelter with a view of distant peaks. The Icewater Springs shelter was where I'd spent my second night. In the morning, the sun rose over a faraway ridge and the sky became a vivid orange. I'd met a young couple hiking from Maine to Georgia. They only had about 200 more miles to go. Another man had hiked with a tripod and his camera gear to capture the night sky. Another regaled us with the tale of how mice had chewed into his water supply the night before. I had first met the four men from Virginia at that particular shelter. They'd graduated high school together in Fairfax, class of 1976, and every year unite for a long walk through the woods. One of them asked if it was my first time on a days-long backpacking trip. It was. Perhaps the regulars could sniff out a newbie. The last full day in the woods began with a short hike along the Appalachian Trail to a side trail called the Jump Off. For 45 minutes, I had its most desirable vantage point to myself. On a clear day like this one, it was possible to see the little Tennessee towns on the horizon in one direction, and in the other, the outline of the Appalachian Trail rising and falling along the ridge. A few miles away, Charlie's Bunyan jutted out like a gray, rocky wart. Soon I was among the day hikers on the Bunyan, where the views proved limitless. A little farther north, the crowd quickly thinned. Over a stretch of about 7 miles along the Appalachian Trail, I saw three other people, two friends who'd recently graduated college in Tennessee, and the long-haired man who'd played the harmonica. The trail dipped and climbed, and in between the flat spots revealed gold-tinted slopes and valleys that made me forget about the weight of my pack. It was the sort of walk that could make you forget about a lot of things, if only for a moment. I reached the shelter at dusk, pitched a tent, and ate before dark. I listened to the stories from strangers in the shelter and to the sound of the harmonica and then to the rustling of little critters moving past my tent. I fell asleep to the sounds of leaves gently settling on top of it and awoke ready to hike a mile and a half back to what became my new favorite place. I knew it was 5,487 feet above sea level because that was what the marker in the stone said. I'd hoped to see the sunrise, but a thick layer of clouds hung low. Soon Tarzan walked past and continued south. I sat atop a rocky ledge for 30 minutes or so and admired the serenity. In the nation's most visited national park, I was the only one here. I walked north and eventually down the mountain, and for several hours I walked alone. What a trip for Andrew Carter, huh? If the outdoors is something you might enjoy, then consider hashtag Stokes Rocks. GuestQuest.com calls it an outdoor adventure in all seasons. Now, this brief item is part of the Guest Quest Winter 2020 insert. It came with the October 25th, 2020 issue of the News and Observer. Find yourself in a Stokes state of mind this fall and winter, an area with space to spread out. Limited traffic jams are crowding small town and rural communities spread among winding country roads. Cooler weather and crisp mountain air help to make outdoor adventure bearable with natural cooling, climbing to new heights on mountain peaks, rock outcroppings of Moore's Wall, or biking mountainous trails at Hanging Rock. The Dan River flows throughout and is ideal for fly fishing or cast a line from the kayak to catch bass, rainbow trout, brown trout, and more. Discover a unique gift. Enjoy a music or theater show at the Arts Place in Danbury. Pique your appetite at fine dining locations in Keene. Wake up overlooking the frost-covered mountains at Big Creek Lodge. Enjoy a chef-prepared meal there before wine tastings at Pilot Mountain Vineyard or craft beer flights at Midsummer's Brewing. And you can learn more at HangingRock.com. That's HangingRock.com. Now let's travel back to July 2020. It's summer, and writer Elizabeth Heath has found a way to get away in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. She takes us aboard rented houseboats, which allow vacationers to take to the water at a safe distance. Her story is found in the July 30th, 2020 issue of the Washington Post. If you're a would-be vacationer looking to spend some time on the water and maintain your social distance, you just don't have a lot of options in this pandemic summer, which is why it's time to take another look at houseboat rentals. On lakes and waterways across the United States, houseboat rentals, we're referring to self-piloted boats rather than moored vacation rentals, are a way to get far from the crowds and enjoy the water in the company of a group of family or friends. And with houseboat rentals available in at least 19 U.S. states, taking a houseboat vacation could mean you don't have to go too far from home to get away. In national parks, state and national recreation areas, and along some rivers, a houseboat vacation begins as follows. Check in at the marina and get a quick lesson on piloting a houseboat. Load up all the food, luggage, and gear you'll need for the duration of your trip, then head out into the watery wilderness. When it's time to cruise again, think small. You may see other boaters, but it'll be from a distance. Unless you need fuel, food, or other provisions, unlikely if you've planned ahead, you don't need to see anyone outside your boat for the duration of your holiday. And that isolation, being with a known group but being far away from everyone else, certainly has a newfound appeal in 2020. "We're having one of our best years ever," says Bill Doherty, co-owner of Rainy Lake Houseboats in International Falls, Minnesota. His family has run tourism ventures on the lake for 102 years and currently rents 27 houseboats. Doherty is particularly pleased that more families with young children are renting, partly as a result of summer sports and camps being canceled. Instead, he says, families are out there having the time of their life. They leave everything behind, and no one tells them where to go or what to do. That freedom, according to other houseboat purveyors, is a big part of the draw. Houseboating, says Robert Knowlton, general manager of Lake Powell Resorts and Marinas in Arizona, allows you to get out in nature and find your own private piece of paradise. And the charms of that solitude are not just for families. Chad Taylor of Lake Mead Mojave Adventures says many a high-profile CEOs rent houseboats from his Nevada marina because they like to get out on the lake and hide for a week. So what does a group actually do while hiding out on a houseboat for a week? Activities depends on the whims of the body of water. On Rainy Lake, a glacially carved lake formed more than 10,000 years ago, houseboaters can motor during the day, though most choose to tie up at any of the first-come, first-served moorings on the U.S. side of the lake. Americans can't currently cross into Canadian waters, and they spend their days exploring trails, playing on sandy beaches, and fishing, floating, swimming, and bird watching. Most of Doherty's boats come with water slides, and guests can rent or bring their own small motorboats, canoes, kayaks, and stand-up paddleboards. He recommends boaters pick a different mooring every day to see as many of the lake's bays, islands, and rock formations as possible. On Lakes Powell and Mead, the surreal desert and canyon landscapes of these dam-formed lakes tempts houseboaters to anchor on a sandy beach and use it as a base for exploration. Lake Mead's 550 miles of shoreline mean you can easily have a beach all to yourself and spend the week swimming or riding jet skis and skiing, tubing, and exploring with a smaller tow-behind motorboat. On Lake Powell, 2,000 miles of shoreline and the nearly 100 slot canyons of Glen Canyon lure hikers, while the lake allows motorized and non-motorized watercraft. Kids, Knowlton says, are usually content to be in the water all day, tubing and going up and down the slides nonstop. He says families with older kids are wise to bring along footballs, frisbees, or a cornhole game. Broadcast journalist Kelly Burns Garvey recalls a trip on Lake Powell with 14 family members ages 2 to 75. The kids loved the water slide, and adults had time to relax. In a week, she says, we swam, explored rock formations, and never really saw anyone else. A more tropical experience awaits on Florida's St. John's River. Houseboaters who rent from Holly Bluff Marina in DeLand, located northeast of Orlando, can motor within a 50-mile radius of the marina and discover abundant wildlife, clear springs suitable for swimming and snorkeling, and even some riverside restaurants. Boaters usually anchor on the water, as the river shoreline typically has dense vegetation, as well as the occasional alligator. Other than on Florida's reptile-rich riverbanks, campfires on the beach and stargazing are in the prime after-dark activity for houseboaters. Las Vegas food stylist Ronnie Fields Moonen, who spent a Thanksgiving houseboat vacation on Lake Mead, said most evenings consisted of bonfires, marshmallow roast, and sing-alongs. Though amenities vary from vendor to vendor, houseboats generally come equipped with everything you would find in a typical vacation rental, including cooking gear in all or most linens, plus safety equipment and a ship-to-shore radio with 24-hour emergency support. Fuel is charged based on consumption. Boats leave the dock with a full tank, and you only pay for what you use. Towable skiffs, jet skis, not legal in our waterways, kayaks, and other toys are extra. Boaters need to bring their food, clothes, and recreation gear. Food, especially, requires planning, since there are no grocery stores in the middle of wilderness areas. Fields Moonen and her husband Rick, a professional chef, packed coolers full of carefully labeled groceries, including a whole turkey they roasted in the boat's ample kitchen. With 10 miles to feed, meals had to be planned down to the last ingredient, and Fields Moonen recalls a lot of cooking and cleaning, and that food took up more space than luggage. Houseboats can range from basic to luxury. Burns Garvey says their Lake Powell boat was like a camper, not luxurious, but comfortable enough, while Fields Moonen and her group rented a deluxe model with a hot tub, 5 bedrooms, satellite TV, and a room on the top deck for morning yoga and Pilates sessions. Piloting the boats is straightforward, and some marinas, like Lake Powell, offer piloted service in and out of the marina. We rent all the time to first-time boaters, Knowlton says. Apart from the rare afternoon thunderstorm, weather is seldom a factor. Still, he says, boaters should keep an eye on the forecast, though the marina will radio if there are any serious weather concerns. On both Lakes Powell and Mead, purveyors advise that in a week's time it makes sense to move the houseboat no more than 2 times, largely because anchoring is labor-intensive and time-consuming. Prices for houseboats naturally depend on the size, the season, and the number of bells and whistles. At Rainy Lake, a cozy two-person honeymooner models rent for about $1,380 a week in peak summer, while deluxe 54-foot 12-person boats with hot tubs rent for $5,795 in the same period. A four-person houseboat from Holly Bluff Marina in Florida rents for $1,500 in high season. The marina's most deluxe boat, a 60-foot model with 4 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms, rents for up to $3,400 a week. From Lake Mead, Mojave Adventures, a 59-foot 10-person houseboat rents for $5,269 in high season, while a mammoth 70-foot model with a wet bar, hot tub, and multiple satellite TVs is just over $8,000 a week. Lake Powell Resorts and Marinas rents a 46-foot economy houseboat for up to 6 guests for about $2,500 a week, and that goes from June through August. Its top-of-the-line 75-foot Odyssey model sleeps up to 16 people in 2,400 square feet of cabin space across 3 levels. In high season, it's $15,000 per week. Everything's bigger out west, after all, and houseboats are no exception. Oh, my goodness, huh? Well, start saving now for your houseboat trip, right, for next summer, all right? Well, that's been a lot of fun today out on the water and doing other things, including hiking. But we've run out of time for our episode of Armchair Traveler today. Hope you've enjoyed it. You'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.